Welcome back. It is 7 minutes after eight. We begin feedback at this point, 715-845-2155. Or if you would prefer to be a part of the show anonymously, seth.mila@wsau.com. Before we get started on the subject matter at hand, let me reiterate something that was part of the commentary this morning. I think it's awesome that we do so much on a particular day for our veterans. I think it's tremendous. We remember them. We honor them. A lot of restaurants give them discounts and this type of thing. Unfortunately, the next day, most of us just kind of go back to doing our normal routine. And our veterans give so much of themselves. It seems, I don't know. You know how there's a lot of us that are called CEO Christians, Christmas and Easter only Christians? You only go to church on the holy holidays? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want us to be that way about our dedication and honor to our veterans. So if you go to our Facebook page for the show, which self-servingly is called Seth Mila WSAU, that's on our Facebook page. I've posted one of many links, one of many resources that you can find that this holiday season through the Red Cross, you can send a greeting card, a thank you card, a get well card perhaps, a Christmas card, Thanksgiving Day. All of these things, you can send just a personalized card, a message to our vets that are both in country and active, recovering from their wounds in various hospitals around the country and around the world. If you are moved on Veterans Day and you find yourself wanting to do more, then this is a great opportunity. Go on Seth Mila WSAU. That's on Facebook. Facebook.com/SethMilaWSAU, and you'll see a post that I just made, which is a link to the Red Cross. If you you can just do a quick Google search, and you'll find many other resources to help you send some sentiment to our veterans that are maybe they're not hearing from their family, maybe they are isolated because they're doing some recovery. I just think it's something that we ought to continue to do. And so I just wanted to start off with that. I think I was trying to think of something else that we could do, you know. And the first thing that came across my mind is, well, you know what? I think I'll have my daughter bake some cookies, you know, and send them. And then I remembered that sometimes that's not available, you know, for security reasons and so forth, that maybe that might not work. I'll have to research that. But I was also reminded, my sister, and forgive me for this, this is funny. My sister, who lives in Washington, D.C. area, during the holidays, every year would, bless her heart, there it is, that Southern thing, oh, bless her heart. And I meant it nicely this time.
Uh-huh.
She would send a big old batch of sugar cookies, all right?
Unedible sugar cookies?
Well, no.
Used them for target practice?
No. Two things about this. She had been doing it for years. I would always say, Barbara, I don't like sugar cookies. I think my wife likes sugar cookies, and I know my kid likes cookies. My kid will eat anything that's called a cookie. It could be a dog biscuit and go, hey, it's a cookie. She would probably try and eat it. So, that's an idea for another.
Do that with cauliflower and broccoli.
Hey, the kid likes some veggies, okay? So I don't have to worry about it. Anyway, every year I would get this box of cookies, and I would tell her every year, I don't like sugar cookies, and by the time they get to me, they are a box of crumbs.
Yeah, because they break easy.
It's a huge box of crumbs. I'm just thinking, yeah, I could have my kid make some cookies, but by the time they got anywhere, Soldier would be like, oh, that's awesome. A box of sugar-flavored sand. That's exactly what I need. Thank you so very much. Anyway, all right, there we go. That's the issue. That's how we're getting started. If you have some ideas of how we can help the veterans and do a little bit more in this holiday season that's coming up and just kind of outreach and encourage.
The American Legion always has a program where they send boxes of stuff.
Yeah.
and they have lists. You can go to your local Legion post. They'll have a list
Perfect.
Of the things that soldiers need in places like Iraq and Afghanistan and other places.
My mom would always call it the care package.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, put together the care package. And those are absolute great ideas. All I'm saying is it tends to be done one time a year. Everybody, it's Veterans Day or it's Memorial Day, and we're going to do it. And then it just peters out after that. And I'm guilty of it, too. I'm not pointing fingers. I'm throwing myself in there as well. If you have other ideas, some other creative things that you have started up or that you have heard about, let us know. 715-845-2155. And, of course, seth.mila@wsau.com. All right, let's talk about the budget for a little bit. I know that's something Tom's just itching. You just you can't wait for us to talk about the budget, can you? You
sure.
Love it.
Okay.
Hey, it's not Obamacare.
Well, that's true. At least it's.
I'm not talking about Obamacare.
It's a different riff on the same song, though. I would imagine. Right?
You think? You think? All right. I prefaced it before we left the morning show and got started with feedback. I prefaced it by let's trying to break it down, understanding the budget in common sense terms. You're a family. And you have X number of dollars to spend, but there's a member of the family that continually racks up the credit card. And after a discussion, and you say, okay, I'm sorry, you're right, I probably shouldn't do that. The next month, racks up another credit card. And then again, and again, and again, and again, and again, and again. You have to start wondering, after the fights, after the discussions, after the threats, the ultimatums, the creditors are calling, you find out that your credit score has gone from 825 down to 650 because you're late on your payments and the creditors are calling. You got to start asking yourself to the person that's continuing to spend all the money and rally support for continuing to spend the money from the other members of the family. You got to stop and think, what are you doing? Why? Why are you doing this? And that's what I wanted to talk about this morning. There's a former Federal Reserve official who was involved in the implementation of what the government has called QE, or quantitative easing. Now, you're familiar with what that is, right?
Yep.
All right. This is where the Federal Reserve is printing money and uses that printed money to buy U.S. Treasury bonds from the Treasury. Now, typically, this is how we support our debt. It's almost as if the world is investing in our country. Companies, in order to raise money, sell stock. Municipalities, in order to raise money to do projects, they sell bonds. Well, the government is no different. The government sells Treasury bonds and other government certificates and securities in order to raise money that it needs. If there's a shortfall in the budget, it sells bonds and securities and so forth in order to shore it up. And, you know, in a normal, healthy economy, that's not a bad idea. And for a very long time, China was one of the biggest countries that was buying these bonds. That's what it was called when China was buying our debt. They were buying these certificates, the treasury bills, etc.
Quantitative easing was put in place during the depths of a recession to try to help with the, call it a stimulus program, if you will, to try to help prop up an ailing economy.
Right, and it was intended, as it was designed, for the money that was being pumped into the economy. And let me finish my explanation. The credit worthiness of the United States began being called into question. As you know, some credit reporting agencies downgraded our credit status. China, along with other reasons and other countries, began backing off of buying U.S. debt. The concern was, okay, they're promising X number of dollars, but we're not exactly sure they're going to be able to pay up. So why do we keep investing when we may not get our money back? So let's take our money somewhere else. Well, the government is dependent on this income from the sale of treasury bills. So,
and of course, we have never defaulted on our debt before.
No, that's correct. So now the government is saying, well, foreign entities are not buying our debt. We're not getting an income from a foreign source. Oh, I know what. We got all these money these printing presses sitting around. Fire those bad boys up. Let's print $85 billion worth of debt every month. 85 billion every month. And so now, instead of foreign entities bringing in their currency into our economy to buy our debt, the U.S. government is buying its own debt. That's called monetizing the debt. And it, I believe the economic term for this, if I remember this from studying economics and studying money, I believe it's referred to as a dumbass move.
Really? Was that in one of your textbooks?
I believe it was. I'm not entirely sure. But I believe that was the phrase. It's paramount to you printing money.
Well, the idea was only to do it for a short amount of time,
right,
until the economy recovered to a certain point.
Right. And that hasn't panned out the way it was designed. That hasn't panned out the way it was done in any way. So we're going to take our first break. You now understand what the whole aspect is of quantitative easing. It is the United States buying its own debt. The Federal Reserve prints the money. The Federal Reserve takes the bucket of money over to the Treasury. It gives the money to the Treasury. The Treasury hands over the Treasury bills. Bada boom, bada bing. Our debt is financed. Really? Really? All right. So there it is. Now, when we come back, we are going to talk about an individual that was responsible, partially, not entirely, not solely, but was involved in the design and administration and implementation of this quantitative easing. What is this Federal Reserve employee saying about the plan now? We'll talk about that when we get back. 715-845-2155.
The Wisconsin Morning News to start your day.
Feedback at 8.
The biggest talkers.
And did we mention football?
There's only one station that delivers it all.
Every day.
AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
Welcome back. 715-845-2155 is the phone number. 715-845-2155. If you want to be part of the show but don't want to call, seth.mila@wsau.com. Okay, so we in the first segment, we very quickly had Economics 101. We explained quantitative easing. We talked about why we're borrowing and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All right, so now let us talk about... this is very important before I forget. If you remember, I have said in the past that the stock market is falsely inflated in its value. And one of the reasons I say that is that every time the government talks about slowing down or easing the quantitative easing strategies, the market takes a dump. The market goes way down in value, 200-300 points. When the market says, or when the Federal Reserve chairman comes out and goes, whoa, we're not doing anything. Everything's cool. We're going to keep pumping money the way we've been doing it. Nothing's changed. Stock market goes back up. Everybody jumps on board and said, yeah, let's ride that gravy train. I also said that the quantitative easing would continue until the unemployment rate reached an acceptable level. Let's talk about acceptable level for just a moment. Tom, do you remember when the economy was in a fairly good status, but and it doesn't matter what administration was handling it, the economy was doing fairly good. Do you remember what number was bantered around as acceptable and healthy unemployment figures? What percent was a healthy and acceptable unemployment rate?
Was it 3?
Between 3 and 5%.
Yeah, okay.
5 is on the heavy side, 3 is on the low side. And again, for those that are thinking, well, everybody's got to have a job. No. In economics, 100% employment is a bad deal, bad idea. I don't have time or the desire to go into why, but 100% employment is a bad idea. 3%, 3.5%, you are perfect. You're a chef would look at it and go, oh, perfect simmer. Everything's cooking. Everything's great. Okay. If the normal range, 3 to 5% on the high side, let's just call the number 4% in the middle. If that's where we're trying to get with an economic recovery, then why would it be altered? I now, just keep that in mind, 4% is our target for unemployment. I now go to a quote from a gentleman that is a former Federal Reserve official, took part in the implementation of the agency's quantitative easing policies. His report is coming out. It's an op-ed piece in the Wall Street Journal. He says, quote, we went on a bond buying spree that was supposed to help Main Street. Instead, it turned out to be a feast for Wall Street. His name is Andrew Huszar. He says he goes on and says, I can only say one thing. I'm sorry, America. Right now, the Federal Reserve is in its fourth round of quantitative easing, purchasing an estimated $85 billion in bonds each month until the unemployment rate reaches 6.5%.
And we're about, what, 7% now?
7.5, 7.75, and so forth. This is my point. The government is now realizing that coming to a 4% unemployment rate at this type of a recovery is impossible.
Or at least it's going to take a long time.
At this type of economic recovery strategy, a 4% unemployment rate is impossible. It is not going to happen. Corporations are not hiring. Corporations are not investing in expansion. They are hoarding cash. Why? Because they have no idea what's happening. Healthcare issues, tax issues, all of these things are scaring corporate America.
Not all.
Huszar goes on to write, he says, it wasn't long before my old doubts resurfaced. Despite the Fed's rhetoric, my program was not helping to make credit more accessible to the average American. Banks were only issuing fewer and fewer loans. More insidiously, these are the words of the individual I'm talking about. His name is Huszar. These are his words. More insidiously, whatever credit they were extending wasn't getting much cheaper. Quantitative easing may have been driving down wholesale costs for banks to make loans, but Wall Street was pocketing most of the extra cash. From the trenches, several other Fed managers also began voicing their concerns that quantitative easing was not working as planned. Our warnings fell on deaf ears. In the past, Fed leaders, even if they ultimately erred, would have worried obsessively about the costs versus the benefits of any major initiative. Now the only obsession seems to be with the newest survey of the financial market expectations or the latest in-person feedback from Wall Street's leading bankers and hedge fund managers. Sorry, U.S. taxpayer.
So that means the people who cratered the economy the first time are still being rewarded for it.
I understand you're going to try and take that route, but no. No. You have to understand what's happening here. The market understands that there is a policy in place that is falsely inflating market prices. You and everybody else, especially Wall Street, if you see an opportunity where if I buy here today, tomorrow there's a very good likelihood that the price is going to be higher, are you going to get in or are you going to sit there and go, nope, not getting in? What are you going to do? You're going to get in. And that's what Wall Street is doing. That's what he is saying. The policy of quantitative easing is making it look as if there is money coming in and we've got money to do these things.
Some of the concerns, though, of Mr. Huszar can be laid at the feet of the banks who are refusing to make the loans.
I don't discredit that at all. Okay, there are some issues. Yeah, there are issues there, too. But the main issue and the one I'm trying to stay focused on, which is the biggest point here, the government is falsely giving the impression that the economy is in recovery and getting healthier. It is not accurate. The mounting debt that we are incurring upon ourselves is unmanageable. And this is not even talking about debt that we have, obligations that we have that are unfunded obligation. That's not even part of the subject yet. The point is that the quantitative easing strategy is falsely inflating the stock market. The stock market investors are jumping on board. If I think it's going to continue to go up, I'm putting it in there. I'm putting the money in there. If we start seeing unemployment reports come out that show unemployment is dropping and it's going to get close to that 6.5% mark, which I have said before was going to be the new considered safe haven average, from 4%, which is actually healthy, to 6.5%, which is asinine. The government's going to try and convince us that that's our target where we're healthy. The point is,
we've got people in the Fed that are suggesting that the tapering is coming.
Right.
The Dallas Fed chief, Kansas City Fed chief.
And when you see that unemployment rate drop to 6.5% or get anywhere close, we go under 7, you're going to see a mass exodus out of the stock market. You are going to see all of the investors say, all right, free ride's over. Gravy train has been turned off. Time to bail out and get the heck out of this market because we're all going to die. And the market is going to have a horrific correction. WSAU, we'll be right back.
The news, talk, and Rush Station. News Talk 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.